One of the wonders of science is how an action based on initial assumptions, hypotheses, and theories can lead at times to unexpected and indeed beneficial consequences. When these consequences have the potential to affect the lives of millions of people, the research obviously takes on added significance. The treatment of obesity via bariatric or gastric bypass surgery does help many to lose significant weight. Many of these people have type 2 diabetes. They have been using either insulin or a combination of oral medications to control the disease. However, the earlier the disease is diagnosed in a person's life, the more likely they will suffer the myriad of cardiovascular and kidney complications, among others. They believe that diabetes is a chronic, progressive, incurable disease. According to surgeon Dr. Richard Stubbs, this belief is wrong. He hypothesizes that type 2 diabetes is a disease of the gut and has evidence to substantiate the claim. Moreover, in diabetic patients who undergo specific gastric bypass operations, their type 2 diabetes disappears in 6 days and never returns. I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Richard Stubbs, who's an upper gastrointestinal surgeon, professor in the Department of Pathology and Molecular Medicine, and director of the Wakefield Biomedical Research Unit at the University of Otago in Wellington, New Zealand. Good afternoon, or I guess good morning, Dr. Stubbs.
Good morning, Barry. Thank you for that introduction.
Oh, you're very welcome. And as we were talking just before our interview, I heard your interview on ABC's Australian Broadcasting Corporation Science Show with Robin Williams, and I thought I had to have you come on the air because I and my son, when we listened to the interview, were very excited, and my son is 14 years old, very excited with the information that you were presenting to Robin Williams. And I wanted to start off and ask you, my first question is, what is the scope of diabetes in the world today? How many people are affected, and what has been your observation with where the direction this disease is heading?
Oh dear, I'm ashamed to say I should have that figure in my head, but I don't. But what we know is that certainly somewhere between 5 and 10% of certainly the Western population and a growing percentage in other parts of the world, somewhere between 5 and 10% mm-hmm. of people are diabetic or at least pre-diabetic and are likely to become diabetic. And these sorts of numbers have been growing steadily and are expected to become quite enormous. For example, there have been sort of predictions that within another 25 years in many countries as many as 50% of middle-aged people will be diabetic. So this is an enormous problem.
Now, to date, what do we know about the pathophysiology of the disease as it's being taught today to clinicians and researchers in terms of understanding why it occurs, and what has been the focus of research with that pathophysiology in mind?
Barry, that's a really difficult question, and I have to tell you to start with, I'm not a diabetologist.
Right.
And one of the things that, to my mind, has allowed me to come to this with a fresh look is that I don't have my head cluttered up with what we already think we know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I obviously know quite a lot, and so if I was to try to answer your question, I would say type 2 diabetes is a result of what we refer to as insulin resistance, which mm-hmm. is broadly encompasses two things. Firstly, a reduction in a disorder of insulin secretion, but most importantly, a disorder of insulin action, meaning the insulin that is produced in the body simply doesn't do its job. Mm-hmm. And as a result, more and more and more is produced because the amount of insulin produced by the body is regulated by the blood sugar. So if the blood sugar goes up, the amount of insulin produced will go up. So if your insulin isn't working, then you have to make more and more and more. So the hallmark, if you like, of type 2 diabetes is high levels of insulin in the blood in the face of poor control of blood glucose. So here we've got insulin resistance, and then you would say, well, what do we know about insulin resistance? And we nearly, it's not right to say nothing, but on a show like this, we're allowed to.
Okay.
Because the truth is, insulin resistance has been intensively studied for 20, at least 20 years. Mm-hmm. And actually, although we know quite a lot about it and we know how insulin acts, we really have no idea what causes it. And that's where our research comes in, that we have, I think, we and others, and I'm not the originator of the hypothesis,
right,
though I am certainly one of the early players in this, and I have, perhaps my version of it is a little different than others. But for the first time, to my knowledge, we have a serious hypothesis about the origin of insulin resistance. And so although we know a lot about the disease and what happens and how we can try to control it, we know very little about the basic cause of it. And we therefore tend to just put, the public have led to believe that this is just related to obesity, related to overeating, related to McDonald's or Kentucky Fried or fast foods. These are simplistic at best and conceivably even, though I hate to say it, conceivably even irrelevant. But I think it's best to say they're simplistic at best, and so long as we go on thinking of these as the fundamental reason for the disease, we won't make big inroads.
Now, before we get to the law of unintended consequences, what was the primary purpose for gastric bypass surgery as it was originally intended?
Gastric bypass surgery and other forms of what has come to be known as bariatric surgery or obesity surgery, that was for major weight problems. And the group of people for whom this was designed were those who had a BMI of greater than 40. So broadly speaking, I suppose these are people who are approaching or double their ideal body weight. And the earliest forms of surgery for this condition were devised in the 1950s. They were the small intestinal bypass operations, jejunal bypasses, which were done in quite large numbers, but were successful but attended by or accompanied by a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
So they really are not done today. Gastric bypass started in the 1960s, around 66, 67. And has been modified many times, and I have to say this is still a field in evolution in terms of devising the ideal operation. But there are a number of candidate operations now performed around the world, of which the gastric bypass is a variation on the theme, and there are different forms of gastric bypass. But these are all very effective at achieving major weight loss. So people who are sort of 130 kilograms after a gastric bypass can expect perhaps to be around 80 kilograms a year later. And depending on the procedure done, the reliability into the future varies a little. But broadly speaking, weight control is maintained.
So
it was for obesity, and it was just assumed that there were a range of consequences of obesity that would also be addressed by this operation. But undoubtedly, those fronting up for the operation were coming because of obesity.
And so,
severe obesity.
And so the surgeries were done, and your observations, the consequences of the outcomes of these surgeries, what were you finding?
Well, let me just take you back to probably the most interesting or the paper in relation to diabetes. The first serious observations and good documentation of those observations was made back in the 1990s, and there was a publication in 1994 from Professor Walter Pooris and his group at the University of East Carolina. And they wrote a paper entitled, Who Would Have Thought It? An Operation Proves the Most Effective Therapy for Diabetes mellitus. it appeared in the Annals of Surgery, which was then and remains the number one journal of surgery in the world. So that appeared in 1994 and largely fell on deaf ears for probably 6-7 years, I would say. So Walter Pooris and myself and others were just making the observation that people, in this case with diabetes, seem to no longer need medication after this operation. People with high blood pressure no longer needed blood pressure medication. People with asthma no longer needed asthma, or many of them didn't. Mm-hmm. So we published a paper in 2005, I think, which was quite a detailed publication of the improvement in comorbidities that accompanied this surgery. And we certainly documented in that the improvement in diabetes, hypertension, dyslipidemia, the hypercholesterolemia, hypertriglyceridemia. These are the things, of course, that lead to heart disease. So one can infer that there's going to be a major change in rates of heart disease in those who have the surgery. We had also changes in reflux, gastroesophageal reflux, in asthma. And there's a whole range of others. There's a plethora of information in the world literature about the conditions which are improved by this sort of surgery. So, but these were seen as secondary effects, but to some extent now are being highlighted and in some people's minds are becoming the primary effect, and we're seeing all sorts of writers claiming that the main purpose of the surgery should be the metabolic and other health benefits. And I'm not sure that I fully agree with that, but it's a very nice, there's some very nice byproducts of the surgery, that's for sure.
We're in conversation with Dr. Richard Stubbs, upper GI surgeon and professor in the Department of Pathology and Molecular Medicine. He's director of the Wakefield Biomedical Research Unit at the University of Otago in Wellington, New Zealand. And when we come back, I want to focus on all these results and all these consequences that Dr. Stubbs has mentioned, and perhaps the, what I like to use, the post hoc ergo propter hoc outcome of people thinking that it was the weight loss that may have contributed to these effects, and how Dr. Stubbs has actually looked at this differently and has said maybe it's not the weight loss that has done this, as we assume, but rather some other factor that has contributed to these changes. You're listening to Sunday House Call. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. We'll be back with Dr. Stubbs in just a few minutes.